How's it going? Before we kick off this episode, I wanted to make a couple of quick product and inventory announcements. I typically don't do this at the beginning of this podcast, but seeing that it's the beginning of the new year, we got some new products coming. I just wanted to kind of fill you in. If you so incline, you can jump onto the website and take a look and take advantage of some of the discounts that we're offering. So first and foremost, we're looking to do a new run of shirts. So I put a bunch of the previous shirts that we had in inventory on sale. That includes even the hoodies that I'm wearing here right now. But all the shirts except for the deep purple shirts are on sale. We're just trying to clear out a bit of inventory, make room for some fresh new designs that should be coming in maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 months. So if you feel like picking up a shirt, they're pretty high quality Bella Canvas t-shirts, made in America, super soft, printed here in Bellingham by our friends over at Liat Unlimited. Next up, if you've been waiting for a set of occult pedals, by the time this episode drops, we might even have a batch and they could be shipping. If not, they're supposed to land before the end of January. Sorry for any delays. Hopefully we're through the bumpy roads of manufacturing supply chain issues moving forward next year. Our goal is to have more inventory more consistently. If you haven't picked up a set, now might be a good time to place a set on order, because who knows how long they're going to last. Historically, they've sold out pretty quickly. We have made some pretty significant updates to the pedals from moving into the next batch. A lot of information is about to come. I'm not going to get into it right now because we've got a really great episode that we need to get to first. So look for more info on the occult updates and omen updates. And then, yeah. Okay, I think that's all I really wanted to say. Let's get into this episode. Yeah.
Right there. That was like
when
you said wait.
Okay. All right. That's probably me just yelling. Okay. You ready?
Ready. All right. What do we do?
3, 2, 1. Ooh, that was a really nice one.
That was nice.
Yeah. Mmm, yummy. Yummy Kolschen beer. Hannah Bergman.
Hello.
Welcome to the Dead Sailor Podcast.
Thank you. Stoked to be here.
You are the most asked person.
No way. That's awesome. Yeah.
Everyone's like, when's Hannah's episode? When's Hannah's episode? When's Hannah's episode?
Well, I hope it lives up to the hype.
I think it will. Thanks for coming on. You're busy these days.
Yeah.
Not that's the reason why you didn't go on the podcast, but you're just always busy.
It's pretty much always. Yeah. Even the slowest time of the year, it still feels busy.
Yeah. 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 So what do you... before we dig into everything,
okay,
what's new? What's fresh?
Well, I got a couple new bikes recently, like in the last week. Pretty stoked on that.
Patrol, right?
Patrol and a Sentinel.
Nice.
Pretty hyped on some freshies and kind of just in the downtime in the winter hibernation mode, kind of just starting to dream about what I want to do next year.
Yeah. We were, before the cameras were rolling, or maybe they were rolling at one point, you were talking about skiing.
Mm-hmm.
Which we can get into your ski career,
because yeah.
I think that's something that maybe a lot of people don't really know about you. But yeah, the town here in Bellingham, we got a bunch of snow recently,
yeah.
And you were just telling us about skiing on the lookout,
yeah.
Which is hilarious and awesome. Did you get to ride mountain bike trails on skis?
Yes, I attempted to ride mountain bike trails on skis with Miles, my roommate. Skiing's basically my off-season activity and what I grew up doing, so I love skiing still. But last year we got enough snow in town to do some urban skiing on rails, so Miles and I built some jumps and some rails in town. And then this year we wanted to try and ride our skis on some of the bike trails, and we were like, oh, it's gonna be you think of skiing, it has to be really steep to have enough speed. So we're like, we're gonna find the steepest trail and go ride that, because that would be perfect for skiing. And it was so sketchy. We were both going way too fast and carving on rocks, and there was not enough snow, but it was really fun.
Do you think the Chief is rideable on skis?
I've thought about that a lot, actually. I think it's hard to say. I think maybe if there was a lot of snow and you maybe packed in the transition at the bottom, you could ride on skis.
Would you probably hit it like you would on a mountain bike where you creep into it and then just straight down it?
I think so. I don't know how else you would do it. Like do a couple little like slashy turns going in and then just ride straight down.
I think that would be absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, probably really scary. Unless there's a lot of snow, but we don't really get that much snow here. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But other than that, did you ride any of the flow trails on your skis?
Yeah, we rode like a flow trail, but it was just like not enough snow, so we were going way too fast and you couldn't turn, because if you turned you're just hitting dirt and like frozen dirt, so it just like accelerated you. So yeah, not our best idea, but it was entertaining.
Nice. Yeah, all the snow's gone now, so we're kind of transitioning back to biking in town. So you're let's start way back. You're from Hood River.
Mm-hmm. Yep, grew up in Hood River, Oregon.
Were you born there?
No, I was born technically in Bellevue, Washington. Grew up in Portland until I was fourth grader, so pretty good chunk, and then moved to Hood River.
Yeah, and you spent a lot of time, most of your life in Hood River.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about the Hood River mountain bike scene there, because I've never ridden Post Canyon or in the like general area, but I rode Syncline on the other side across the Columbia River. Did you ride mountain bikes when you lived in Hood River?
A little bit. That's where I started riding. Yeah, I was in Hood River when I was in high school. And the way I like to describe the mountain biking in Hood River is it was kind of like ahead of its time back in the day. Like it had some free ride jumps and features and like big tall ladder bridges and stuff kind of before that was really common, and then it hasn't really progressed a whole lot until more recently, but it was a really awesome place to grow up and to learn to ride.
Yeah,
and Post Canyon's still really awesome.
Yeah, did your dad Tim he ride a lot of mountain bikes before you were getting into it, or did you guys kind of discover together?
He did mountain biking like in when he was in college in Michigan, but it was just like riding gravel roads.
He's from
roads.
Michigan.
He's from Michigan.
I never knew that.
Yeah, he went to school in like U of M, I think. Is that the school up there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's in Ann Arbor. Yeah.
Yeah. And he grew up outside of Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. See, that's why Tim and I get along so well.
Yeah. So he got into mountain biking. He was in college in Michigan, which was basically just riding like fire roads and stuff. And I have some awesome, like my mom showed me some videos of him like riding cross country mountain bike racing, but they're just like riding gravel roads and it's pretty rad. And then he got more into it when we moved to Hood River.
Yeah, nice. And so during that time, was that when you kind of started getting into mountain biking or bike riding at all?
Yeah, when I was in high school. So he was really into it. He would go like ride Moab with his buddies every spring and kind of like come back and I'd hear stories of riding cool trails and like him just being really excited kind of got me excited about the idea of mountain biking. But it was kind of his thing. Like he didn't want really me to get involved in his extracurricular activity, that made me want to do it even more. Then I was begging him to let me go riding with him. So eventually he caved when I was probably like a junior in high school, and he gave me his old hand-me-down mountain bike so that he could get a new bike and then I could go riding with him.
Nice. What bike was that?
The bike that he gave me was a 2012 Ellsworth Moment, which was like the kind of a free ridey bike at the time, like 26 inch wheels, 160 travel.
Yeah.
I thought it was like the coolest thing in the whole world.
I'm sure it was probably a really cool bike
It was very cool back then. Yeah. I don't think Ellsworth's changed since then. So it's pretty awesome.
Same bike. Yeah. I don't want to trash talk Ellsworth. Yeah. But, you know. I don't even know if that brand's around honestly anymore.
Sure.
But no, that's amazing. Yeah. And so before you got in, let's go back to the skiing thing.
Okay.
You were a skier before you were a mountain biker.
Yeah.
And so have you been skiing for?
I've been skiing since I was probably like 3 or 4 years old. Like my dad would take me up to like Ski Bowl and Timberline, and like I'd do the little kids camp and he would kind of send me off for the day. And then, so I was skiing like my whole childhood, and then in high school they had like a ski bus and like a ski team that I could do, and they would take you up to the mountain after school every day, like 3 days a week, so pretty often you'd go up in the bus, ski all the way until like 9 o'clock, it's like night skiing, and then come home. So I skied probably like 4 or 5 days a week when I was a kid. So
that's
like
awesome.
All the time.
I was also in like a ski school thing when I was growing up, and that's how I was snowboarder, but like you know, I think I was in like sixth grade or something. I joined ski club
yeah.
in middle school. And we, our ski resort was a, you know, in Michigan was essentially a trash pile that
actually,
like it actually yeah. was a trash pile. There was an active dump on the backside yeah. of it and that they would bury garbage
totally.
In. And then you would ride up, you know, the chairlift.
Yep.
The chairlifts were like old. I think there was one chairlift that was like a quad speed chair, but it really wasn't very fast. You know, it was kind of like a quad chair that you would have at Baker. You know, they're not super fast, but they're fit more people. But yep. everything else was two seater chairs, and you would spend more time sitting on the chair than you would down. Actually riding yeah. down, which is hilarious.
I think my dad actually took me to a ski hill in Michigan one time when we went back to visit family, and it was actually on a trash pile. I remember him telling me that.
It might have been. So the ski resort that I would go to was Bittersweet.
I don't remember the name of it at all.
Yeah, but. It might have been that resort. I mean, there's actually quite a few of them yeah. that are built on trash piles, pretty, which, you know, that's how you can cool, get yeah. elevation, I totally. Guess, there. Which is not much. I think it's like 150 yeah, feet totally. Or something, you know. But the board park scene and like urban riding and stuff like that is somewhat popular in Michigan because, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of elevation, so you can't, you know, riding urban stuff is kind of the big thing, I guess.
And they get a lot of snow in the winter.
Yeah, so. Well, you used to. It yeah. seems like nowadays it's less than before. Mm-hmm. It's more like our climate where they get snow and warms up and melts away.
Yeah.
It comes back again every so often, like, you know, but, no, that's amazing. That's awesome. And so you used to race, right?
No, for skiing, I just did like freestyle.
Freestyle.
Yeah. So yeah. like to do this high school ski team, you had to be on the race team. Mm-hmm. So you had to go up there and do like one run of gates or whatever. But then we would just go, like I would just go and ride the park the yeah. whole rest of the night. So it's like you had to, it was basically just like a loophole to get to do the ski bus as you were on the race team.
Yeah.
But I
yeah.
never actually really raced.
Yeah.
I would just like go through the gates on my twin tip skis and then go right to the park.
Just straight
just, like,
to the park.
Ride the jumps all night. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. You're a really talented skier. And I think a lot of people, it's kind of funny that like, I don't think a lot of people know that about you. You know, but you do share it from time to time mm-hmm. on your social media. You know, you can do flips and spins and slide rails.
Yeah.
That photo of you sliding the rail in Alabama was I was just like blown. I was like, oh my God, that is like the sickest thing ever.
Yeah. That's pretty much all I did through like all my childhood was like ride rails. I was like, I was talking to Lucy Van Eastern, who's a young up and coming free ride mountain biker. We went to the Air Rec Center the other night and she was like talking about how she saw that photo. And I was like, that's all I did when I was your age was just like do mm-hmm. that. So it's pretty fun to get to do it every once in a while. Mm-hmm.
Is she riding, like is she ski or snowboard?
She does. Yeah. But her main thing's biking
okay.
for sure.
Gotcha. Yeah. yeah. No, that's awesome. So when did you kind of transition from like park stuff to riding more like backcountry?
That was when I moved to Bellingham because yeah. Mount Baker has much more.
Yeah, like, there's not a board park.
There's not really a park until yeah. this year. They had like a small one. But yeah, I haven't ever skied park at Baker. It's always just been powder and backcountry and side country.
Yeah, that's kind of my story too. Like, no, not specifically Baker, but just the Pacific Northwest, like moving to Seattle and riding Alpental and, you know, the board parks are okay mm-hmm. in Washington in some places, but the powder is where it's at,
yeah.
right? So like I didn't know how to ride powder
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. I had to learn at Baker, which was pretty fun.
Yeah. Just tomahawk.
Pretty much, yeah. And getting stuck. Like Baker has so many like places that you just get cliffed out and it's a pretty unique mountain in that you have to duck ropes to get to certain lines mm-hmm. and that's part of just riding there is like you got to know where you want to duck and stuff. So that was a bit of a learning curve. I definitely clipped myself out a few times.
Yeah. So how do you, I guess, balance your like desire to ski and the mountain biking? Does one come before the other for you or?
Yeah, I think biking pretty much always comes first. And I think a lot of that's just because it's more convenient to just grab my bike and go for a ride in town. Like Baker is far enough from Bellingham that it's like, I'm only going to go when I really feel motivated, like the powder's really good or mm-hmm. Like I'm committed to spending the whole day up there pretty much.
Yeah. But do you feel like when winter comes around, do you feel like relieved or excited to like do something a little different?
Yeah, totally. I always get excited about skiing again yeah. every winter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of get burnt out in like the late fall
yeah.
after like having ridden through spring, summer, mm-hmm. fall. And fall is the best, in my opinion. Fall and spring are like the best here in Bellingham.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like ready like when the snow starts falling, my mind just sort of shifts. Like my bike is in there and I haven't touched it in like a month. And I've only been to Baker, I think, one time this season. I've been really busy with other things. That's my excuse. But, you know, I just get sort of, I'm like, okay, finally something to do, something else to do. And it's really good and healthy for me because I give myself a little break from riding. And then that way, when I come back to it, you know, in the spring, I'm like rejuvenated and excited and ready to like ride when it's all perfect dirt, you know?
I feel the same for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us about your move from Hood River. Did you graduated and then moved here to Bellingham to go to school?
Yep. Yeah. I graduated high school in 2015. And that was coincidentally the year after I got that Ellsworth. So I was like, I want to go somewhere where I can ski and bike. And I heard about Bellingham from my old boss, who, shout out to Pepe at Second Wind. Well, not called Second Wind anymore, Pierce Stoke. I worked at the ski shop in Hood River. They're amazing. Him and his wife, co-owner of the shop, Erica, they both went to Western in Bellingham, and they told me about it and how great the skiing was and how good the biking was. So that was like, cool, easy choice. I'm going to go up there. Sounds pretty awesome. So I moved up to Bellingham in September of 2015 to go to Western, and brought my skis and bike with me and was just pretty much riding or skiing in every spare moment I had when I wasn't at school.
Yeah. And you studied kinesiology, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I studied kinesiology in Spanish.
And you finished the program but you're focusing on riding and you're working for transition. But do you have a plan? Do you ever want to go back to kinesiology? Is that something that you're like still excited about? Or
yeah, I've thought about that a bit. I could see myself using it. I mean, I do use it being an athlete. Like a lot of the stuff I learned, I find very applicable to what I do now, just not in the way I anticipated. Because I feel like I know how to take really good care of my body for what I need as an athlete, like from nutrition to doing strength training and all that sort of thing, and like injury prevention. I feel like I'm pretty on top of all that. But I could see myself potentially using it in the future, like maybe doing something in sports psychology potentially, or working with other like high level athletes. I don't know exactly what I'd want to do, but
yeah. A lot of athletes go to college or hold off from going to college so that they can focus on a riding career. And then eventually, you know, as they kind of exit their riding career, they'll either go back to school or find a job in the industry. I think it's unique that you approached it, you finished school and then focused on your riding career. I think that was really smart. You know, there's professional athletes that I'm aware of who are incredibly confused or lost, you know, when they exit their riding, all they knew was professional riding because they became a pro and they're like 19 years old or whatever. And then by the time they're 25, 26, 27, early 30s, they're kind of, you know, they've been surpassed by the next generation. But I think that's really great that you prioritized school, and, you know, got your degree and then focused on, you know, your riding career. So,
yeah, I think my whole like trajectory as an athlete has been kind of unique and for a variety of reasons, but I didn't really anticipate being a pro athlete. Like it was, I came to Bellingham cause I thought it sounded like an awesome place and I loved biking and skiing and then just fell more in love with it being here. And then it like sort of just took off from there. It was almost an accident that I took my riding to a professional level.
And we should talk about that because, you know, you've said, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know, around the same time you were on the Kona Supremes, it was around the same time that I sponsored you. And I saw at the, you know, right at the beginning, I was like, whoa, Hannah's going somewhere. Like she's super humble. She's super kind. This is the type of person that I want to like support and I want to represent the brand. And Tennant was a baby, you know, I was running it in my bedroom at that time. And, you know, I gave you, you know, the first run of parts,
which was pretty awesome. Cause I think you're one of my very first like actual sponsors. So I was like, I didn't even really believe that I was getting like sponsored at the time. I was just like, no way I'm getting free parts. This is incredible. Like, it was pretty awesome.
Well, I'm really happy, that is your reaction. Yeah. I really appreciate that. But yeah, and what I was gonna say was, like, you did just, like, skyrocket into, you know, becoming one of the most well-known female free riders. And I think it's your ability to just somehow approach things methodically, mm-hmm. and confidently. You know, I think that's the biggest thing that I notice with your riding, is you are super confident. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I think probably part of it comes from my time spent growing up skiing. Like, I all I wanted to do was learn new tricks and just, like, try and keep up with the boys. So, like, that really just translated into my biking. And I've always, like, loved that whole progression aspect of action sports and sports in general, just, like, trying to find that next thing to push your riding. And, like, I just find that to be so fun and enjoyable. So I think, yeah, it just comes from a pure enjoyment of the sport, versus, like, a very, like, external goal-driven
motivation. I think you once told me that you've ridden the Chief, like 30 or to 50 times or something like,
yeah,
that.
Probably.
Like a massive amount of times. I'm probably just throwing a random number out. But, you know, I rode the Chief one time and I was like, meh, I'm done. Like, that's good enough for me. I don't really need to do that again. What about, like, scaring yourself? Like, what is it about, like, putting yourself in that sort of situation that you keep returning to, like, you know what, I want to push my limits. I want to scare. Mm. I like scaring myself. Like, what is it about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, well, like, the first time you do something is the scariest time. So then once you do it, you learn it, and it gets a little bit easier and a little bit easier until that just becomes normal. So, like, for me, I did the Chief so many times, it became just, like,
A lunch lap,
yeah. So then they kind of find the next thing that you're scared of, do it. It's really scary. And then you feel that sense of progression and accomplishment, and then you can make it more normal. And that's how you can progress really rapidly.
Yeah. But I think it takes a very, specific mentality, mm-hmm. to be able to constantly approach that.
Yeah. Right? I think it's enjoyment too. Like, I actually do really like that feeling. It's very sustainable for me, even though it's not that way for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, I think Keelan's another, like, good example. Like, we get on well together and we ride well together because we have a similar, like, mentality around, mm-hmm. riding.
Yeah. He constantly is, like, seeking that thrill.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I think the other thing too is just, like, you know, watching your progression into, like, free ride. One thing that's super fascinating too is you're still quite young, right? Mm-hmm. You're
26
years old. And that is, like, you're like, in my opinion, you haven't even hit your prime yet. Like, you've got a lot of years ahead of you of, like, progression and being able to, like, be a professional athlete, mm-hmm. and push things. And, you know, there are other women, you know, Casey Brown is one person that comes to mind, who have pushed women's free ride. But what I think is unique about you is I personally view you as, like, one of the pioneer, like, female free riders, right? Like, and I think that you will probably be known as a, you know, pioneer female free rider probably forever, because, mm-hmm. of what you've contributed to the riding industry, you know, to mountain biking. You know, do you share that sort of thought or that mentality or feeling? Is that something you, like, do you view yourself as, like, you know, and I'm helping push the progression or anything?
Yeah,
like that?
I mean, yes and no. Like, I think there are women prior to me being on the scene that have done a lot for the sport and for allowing me to do what I do. So, like, I really respect, the work that they've done. And
do you want to give any shout outs to those women?
Yeah, like Katie, you know? Holden, Casey, mm-hmm. Vera, like some gals that are obviously still, like, mm-hmm. in it too. Yeah, like Claire Bouchard, I think, is, mm-hmm. a rad one. Yeah, there's a few, like, awesome women who pushed it prior to me. And I think I sort of got in at like a really unique time in the progression of the sport, just like at the right time where, I don't know, just like things aligned really well.
Yeah,
it was ready to go. And like, I kind of pushed it at the right time for that to really take off. And so, yeah, so I do think that hopefully my name will continue to be seen in that light, but I also do feel like there are a lot of other names that deserve
absolutely
light as well.
And I think, and what I think is really fascinating is watching, you know, your progression up until this point. There's, you know, hang time, right? If I can think about hang time, there's so many young girls that were at that event who are really good bike riders.
Yeah.
And they're just getting started,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
So, like, I think that the future of women's free ride is so prime for just to be mind blowing.
Yeah, oh,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And I think that, you know, I don't doubt that there are going to be girls coming up from your, like, coming up kind of underneath you that are going to probably eventually surpass you,
yeah,
you know,
100%.
Or some of them already are,
yeah.
you know, and that's great. And that's what we want. Right.
For sure.
But I just think it's so interesting to me because I remember when you were, you know, 19, 20 years old, you know, that's when I think we started working together or like maybe a little after that. You turned 21 and you were riding for Tenet, you know, I think at that time, you know, so
that's
like,
right.
But I just remember you're still young in my eyes, you know, you're like, I still think that you have a ton of great things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I think is that you do, I think that's unique, and Blake and I kind of talked about it a little bit, on her podcast, is sort of your approach to lifting people below you. I think some people that have a competitive nature tend to be threatened by the next generation. Like, oh, this person's going to come up. They're going to steal my sponsors.
Right.
They're going to do this. They're going to take the limelight away from me. But, you know, I think that you don't have that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You are like, no, I want to, like, I've been really lucky to be where I am, and like, I want to lift those people up.
Yeah.
Can you maybe kind of speak to a little bit of that?
Totally. That's been like one of my biggest goals as an athlete, is like using the support I get to like pass it down and like help bring up some of the next generation of riders. And like, I've only been riding since I moved to Bellingham. So 2015 or 2014, I guess, is when I got my first mountain bike. So that's like 8 years ago. It's like not that long ago. And I just like can't, like, to think of the generation now having the opportunities that, given support and opportunities now, when they're actually like 12 years old and 13 years old, and not me when I was, you know, I didn't really do it until I was 18. So like, given those opportunities and resources at a younger age, like, I can't wait to see what they can accomplish. Like, and yeah, like, my progression was rapid, and but like, I don't mean to say that in like I'm like a special, like, have special talent or anything. Like, I just think like it's an example of like, I was given some support and resources, and then was able to go, like, go far with it. But then, like, just like, imagine the potential if the next generation was given those same support and resources, if not more.
I don't think you should minimize your contribution to that too, because, you know, you had a support network of myself and some of the other, like, sponsors that you had through your riding career, and you continue to have through your riding career, but they all, like, they all sponsor you because of who you are, like, your approach to bike riding, your approach to just being a human being. And I think that, you know, you wouldn't be where you are if you weren't who you are, right?
Yeah.
So I think, like, you know, I think you were given a lot of opportunities. You did come into the scene at a really ripe time, but it took your mentality and your like your ability to actually capitalize, but to, like, grow from that,
yeah,
right?
That's
to
true.
Rise from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's really, it's been really fascinating to watch. And the, you know, let's talk about hang time for a little bit. We touched on it a little bit. You know, there's Casey Brown's event.
Dark Horse.
Yeah. Which is funny because that's your nickname from the formation, yeah. Which I love that. But your approach to the hang time event, it is very much like, hey, how can we like lift each other? Is that sort of formed from what you learned from formation how do you sort of view that event and what is your goal with that event?
Yeah. Like it was inspired after I went to formation and just like was so blown away and inspired by getting to be a part of that event and felt like there needed to be more of that, essentially, like more opportunities for more women to get involved. And the format of formation just makes it challenging to bring a lot of people in because it's such a high intensity and like there's a lot of resources needed to make that event happen. So we can't really like have a lot of athletes at that event. But I wanted to try and create an opportunity or an event that could include a lot more athletes and more up and coming athletes versus the ones that were already sort of at the top of the scene. So that was sort of the goal behind hang time. But then also one of the major goals was like just bringing all those athletes together and giving them the opportunity to connect and just like make friends, and just like making those connections and relationships is so powerful, especially when you're trying to progress and you need inspiration and support and just people to do it with. So that was like the hang time play on the name was like catching air, but like hanging out, like we're spending time together, like quality time. We're having meals together and doing really cool stuff together.
Yeah. And you can see it. I mean, it's like you can feel it when you're at that event. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to both years now and I've participated in, you know, a lot of aspects of it and just sort of observed, you know, and it's really, really quite humbling to like, you know, see the friendships like form and blossom.
Yeah, totally.
And I think like if you look at like Crankworx men's slope style, right, or an event like that, you know, there's like Nikolai Rogatkin and like some of these other like athletes are just like hugging each other and so stoked on each other's runs, and you can see that they have like done that like bonding through doing the tour, right? And it's just really cool to see these events that are focused for women that are doing that same thing, because I think it really is important. You know, it's super important for somebody to make those connections, make those lifelong friendships. Yeah. And also like it creates new opportunities that you're sharing new opportunities with people. You know, like I think about, you know, some of the people that I witness riding there that I'm like, I really want to support that person. Yeah. Like, oh, they've already got a component sponsor, rats, you know, like, but it, yeah, it's awesome. And kudos to you for like putting that on and continuing to put it on. And
appreciate it.
So the plan is next year, you'll do another one.
Yep.
Any changes going forward?
Yeah, I have a few ideas for things I want to change. I might move the date to like be more in line with people's schedules. Like it's hard to find time to get to make it so that everyone can come, but like maybe post Crankworx would make sense since people were, well, a lot of already riders will already be on the West Coast, and not too far from Bellingham. But yeah, I have some things I want to do, like to the jump line, to like change a few aspects of the jumps to make them a little bit like more friendly or safer or whatever. And then I would love to like have like a mulch jump or like a trick jump or something to like help with the progression. Like right now I have a little airbag set up, but it's not the most ideal setup because we have to like fully relocate to get to the airbag where it is. And but it'd be sweet to be able to like practice your tricks right next to the jump you're gonna hit and then take it to dirt
Well, there's a kicker that's over by Cedar Dance that can be relocated
that
at
would be
any
pretty
point.
Awesome.
I used to get hit up by about that thing all the time because everybody was like, where's the mulch jump? What the hell? What's going on? And it's just a horrible place. Like, plain and simple, it's just a bad spot.
Yeah.
There's not enough dirt and there's not a long enough run out. It's actually like kind of
pretty short.
It's like kind of dangerous. It would require like a massive amount of dirt to build a runout. Right. It's like 10 feet of elevation you have to essentially fill in from nothing, right? And so, yeah, it's just not a good spot. Well, and then that can go anywhere.
We could put it next to Blue Steel if they would let us. That would be pretty awesome.
We should work on that.
Yeah, that would be pretty
sick. Eric Brown, if you're listening, expect an email. It will
help us progress the riding of the future generations. Yep. It'll be very important.
Yes, of course. Yes. though that's great. So let's maybe even, we're kind of like jumping around a little bit, but let's kind of go back to formation.
Okay.
You know, Katie put on that event.
Yeah.
What year was that?
That was 2019. So that was the year I graduated from college. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I went to Western from 2015 to 2019, graduated in the spring. And I was like, I'm going to take a year off, do the riding thing. It's kind of like getting some traction and just see if like I focus on it for a year, what happens. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll go back to school or not go back to school, but like find a job with my degree. Mm-hmm. And then the fall of that year, so fall, October of 2019 was the first year that Katie hosted formation. And she basically just called me like in the summer and was like, hey, whatever you're doing next month, like make sure your schedule's free. I have this really cool thing that I'm planning. I just want you to be there. I can't give you that many details yet, but it's going to be awesome. So keep your schedule open. I was like, all right, cool. And then she kind of slowly gave me more details as the event got closer. She's like, we're going to be in Utah. It's going to be kind of like a free ride progression camp sort of thing. And then, and that's basically what it was.
You had been to Utah before.
I had been to Utah in that earlier that year, for spring break, spring vacation from school. I drove down there with some friends and like checked it out for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And you rode like Kong top to bottom.
Yeah, we rode Kong and we rode like the old Rampage venue and like hit a couple drops and like steep gnarly chutes and stuff out there. And was like having the best time of my life. I was loving it. We only got to be there for like 2 or 3 days, but we were riding like sunrise to sunset.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
The most fun thing from that first year of formation hearing was how you were like first to ride and last to ride. Like you would spend all day digging and then you would go ride other lines elsewhere.
I don't think that's changed.
I love that about you. You're just like so hungry to just like, you're like, oh, I love this place. I'm going to keep riding. Like for sure. I can't stop riding. Cause I remember that was kind of like, that's how I felt when I was like, you know, I go to Ray's Mountain Bike Park in Cleveland, Ohio. You go there and it's the only place I've ever been that you actually ride for 8 hours straight until your hands, well, Whistler too, I guess, until your hands hurt and you can't hold onto the bars anymore. And it's like unsafe like that. It's that kind of thing. I've never ridden in Virgin.
No way. Really?
No. Huh. So I really want to go down. That's awesome. We've been talking about trying to shoot a project for years. If we could just get Sky to commit to that project. Sky.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. It's time. No, but I've always wanted to go down and check it out. Yeah,
it's amazing.
It looks phenomenal. You've talked about sort of, you know, formation, your time there, and I don't know if you want to talk about this, but you've expressed a little bit of like, almost like, you know, I kind of want to like maybe leave room for somebody else. Mm-hmm. Is that still how you're feeling moving forward?
Yeah, totally. I think I actually like had that thought after this year of formation. Like I feel like formation was really what kind of allowed me to really have a career in mountain biking as a free ride mountain biker. Like that's how I got connected with Red Bull, got like most, like a lot of my major sponsors and like really what sort of put my name on the scene. And I feel like I've gotten so much out of that event that I feel like it's time to like give my spot as an athlete to the next up and coming rider. Like now there are so many names that could take my spot and really benefit from it. And like the first year, I think Katie had trouble finding 6 athletes to do the event. Like she was like, come on, who wants to come do this event? And like got the 6 first athletes. And now there's like so many amazing riders that could do it. And so that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So I don't want to put you on the spot, but if Katie was like, all right, Hannah, who do you want to take your place? Oh. Do you have a rider?
Ooh, I haven't thought about that. There's a lot of folks that could really take it and do amazing.
Who's just blowing your mind right now? You told me about a rider that was on your dick crew that was visiting.
Oh, Lua from Brazil?
Lua, yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's a little bit older, but she used to race like the urban downhill races like a long time ago and like is a really incredible mountain biker. Yeah, she's also an amazing human, but she said she had to stop doing the races because there wasn't enough other women to compete against her, and they just like wouldn't let her compete anymore because they're like, oh, we're not doing women's category anymore. Mm-hmm. So they like wouldn't let her do it. So I was like, that is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like they wouldn't even let you just like ride with the guys or anything. She's like, nope. So
wow.
She got to come to formation and like, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, who when you were there last time, were like whether they were a part mm-hmm. of a dick crew or whatever, who were you just like, dang, that person is really blowing my mind. Like,
there's some young girls that like I think are gonna be like maybe not quite yet, but like in, give them a couple years mm-hmm. and they're gonna be blowing everyone's minds. Like mm-hmm. Lucy is gonna be amazing. She's amazing human and rider, but like and like Brooke obviously is mm-hmm. incredible. Tate is another Canadian rider. She's only like 13 and she's really amazing biker. Mm-hmm. Like well. Riding well beyond her years, as well as she is wise beyond her years. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. There's a gal from New Zealand, Eris, who was at Hang Time. She's mm-hmm. amazing. There's so many. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Brooke is one of those riders that I saw ride for the first time ever. And I was just like, oh my God. Yeah. She's so steezy.
She's so steezy. Yeah.
And so we don't need to get, maybe we'll have Brooke on here sometime. We don't need to get into her history, but she went to Wendell's. Did you ever spend any time there or was that a thing that you did?
Wendell's is like a ski and bike camp that's located on Mount Hood. It wasn't a thing when I was a kid for biking. It was for skiing. I didn't get to go cause it was too expensive when I was growing up. But like I used to sneak in there when I was a kid and like go, cause I used to work at the ski shop. And I got a free pass at Timberline for working at the ski shop. So I used to go to Timberline and then sneak into the Wendell's Park and ride the park and like get to hang out with the pros and stuff. But I never actually got to go to the camp.
I've always wanted to go there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It used to be in like, you know, as in when I was snowboarding back in Michigan, it was always in the snowboard magazine. Yeah. You know, they had the Hood camp and then they had the lower like camp with the skate park and stuff like that. I don't know if they had the skate park back then, but that... The whole thing, I was just like, oh my God, it's like Woodward.
It's so cool.
But like more raw.
Yeah.
Like it seemed like there was like the camp counselors mm-hmm. were like getting drunk with the campers and stuff. You know, I don't know if that's true. That I think we're
talking.
They're
definitely like in rowdy. Like they're riding.
We're talking like early 2000s, okay. You know. But yeah, you know, it was just like a much more loose scene there back then. But or it seemed like it at that time. No, yeah, that place looks amazing. I've always wanted to go.
Now it's really awesome because they have bike stuff too. So you can ride like foam pit, skate park on dirt jumpers. They have dirt jumps on campus. They have mountain bike trails like up on campus. Mm-hmm.
And that's Cody Wilkins was like doing a lot of building with Census Rad Trails or independently. I can't remember if it was all Census Rad Trails, but yeah, we didn't touch on sort of his projects there. But I know Talus went down and helped build the mulch jump and stuff.
Totally, yeah.
Which is awesome to see, like, him kind of getting his rounds with that sort of, like, earn your place, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just really rad to see. But, okay, so let's, from formation.
Yeah.
From air, hang time, you know, what is kind of, like, where are you shifting your focus? Because you used to race enduro. Mm-hmm. You expressed that you weren't, like, really into the competitive nature of racing.
Yeah.
You know, moving forward, what are some like big goals of yours?
Yeah, I guess moving forward, do you want me to touch on like some of the racing stuff?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. You can talk about racing.
Yeah, I guess, I got into enduro cause that was sort of like what my dad did. And then also like,
and when did you start racing after you moved to Bellingham?
No, I actually did one race when I lived in Oregon still. And it was like right after I started mountain biking. So I was like pretty much beginner mountain biker doing a race, which was cool. And that was in like Ashland, Oregon in like 2015 or something. But yeah. And then I was pretty stoked on racing just because it was a pretty awesome outlet for, like, tracking your progression, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, you can like move up in the categories, you can like improve your times on certain trails and at like certain race venues and stuff. So I did like it for that aspect. And then also it's really cool Enduro specifically because you spend so much time riding and meeting new people and getting to ride different places. So that was sort of my way of like having a progression outlet, but then also just like having an excuse to go ride new zones, and like made a lot of friends that way and got to just ride a bunch of people and also ride with my dad, which was pretty cool.
Your dad races, right?
He did. Yeah.
He did. Yeah. 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 No. So, and then you've like, you were doing the CDC, right? Mm-hmm. And then you also did some EWSs as well. I remember your first EWS.
Yeah. Was that in Whistler?
Yeah. The Whistler one. It was the last. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was like positioned at the
That was
perfect
amazing.
Spot. But I was hanging out like at the bottom of this big rock roll. What trail is that?
I think it was like
Clown Shoes.
Clown Shoes. Yeah. Yeah.
It was on Clown Shoes. There's a huge long rock roll. And I'd been waiting for you like to come through there. And you came through. Front tire was flat.
Yeah.
And then you just washed out on the rock and slapped and slid out.
Just aged complete shit.
And then I was like, shit, are you okay? You're like, yeah, I think I'm fine. And then we kind of go off to the trail and I'm not allowed to help you.
Yeah.
But I like had a tube or something.
I had one too. And I tried to.
You tried to put the tube on. You pinched it.
Yeah.
Right. I think like because you pinched it trying to install it. And then I was like, well, here's another tube. And then you pinched that one.
Yeah. And I think I got a third one from somebody else. Yeah, and you pinched tried to install that one. It and then pinched it. And I was like, okay, I give up.
Yeah. And so then you and I walked down the fire road and drank a beer.
Yeah. And that was the last stage of like the most like gnarly enduro I'd ever done. I was in top 10. Like I had been doing so good the whole race. It was like pouring rain it was like a 2-day race. We were riding like gnarly Whistler trails. I was holding it down. Like I'm about to get my top 10 first ever EWS. And then I wiped out on the last stage, or I got a front flat going down the fire road on the last stage. Mm-hmm. Like my tire just exploded off the rim going like 30 miles an hour down a fire road.
Did you crash it?
No, I didn't crash. It just like exploded like loud. And I was like, oh no. And then I was like, I'm almost at the bottom. I'm going to ride it out. But I was not almost at the bottom. I was way far away from the bottom. And I just kept like thinking, I was like, I'll just go around this corner and I'll be close. And then I crashed on a rock roll and then it was over.
Yeah.
That was funny though.
The best part was just like, well, I DNF'd. And I was like, should we drink a beer?
Cracked a beer. And you had an extra one.
I had an extra beer from hiking up the hill to shoot photos and stuff. And we shared a beer as we were walking down the road.
I needed that beer. I think we had been trying to fix my tire for like 20 minutes. Yeah. I'm not going to get top 10 anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was a phenomenal. Was that the only EWS that you ever
raced? I did. That was actually, I did Whistler again. I can't remember if that was the first one or the second one. I've done Whistler twice.
Okay.
And I did North Star in California. And I got to go do it like finale in Italy in 2019 also. Mm-hmm. So I did a couple.
Yeah. What is it about enduro? Like, you know, obviously the competitiveness and like the stress that's involved with that. But is there anything else about racing that you're just kind of like, it's not for me?
Just kind of like stressful. Like you gotta pre-ride the course, and like fitness is a huge aspect of it. And I'm not like I don't care that much about my fitness or care enough to like work on it all the time. Like.
You're really fit, but it's
not
EWS fit. It's the like I build trail and like built like I'm out building shit and hitting big jumps kind of like fit, right?
Yeah,
like you pedal a lot. I think the other day when we rode, you had like you were like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go on a ride in the afternoon or whatever, and I was just like, wait, what? You did a lunch ride and then you're gonna ride later, like. You ride like multiple times a day.
Yeah, but I usually like pedal really slow up the hill and then I'll go down a little bit and then I'll get stoked and go hike back up and hit the same jump a couple times and then maybe dig a little bit and then that's my like riding style.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like try and ride the same trail like top to bottom as fast as you can. I rarely ever do that.
Yeah. Is there anything about racing that you miss? Like is it the traveling or is it the racers or anything about it?
Like the community's cool and I definitely would miss traveling, but I do get to travel a lot now still for other reasons. So I think that part of it has been replaced. It is really cool just to like have that like pure competitive outlet sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know that I need to do it too much anymore. I could see myself maybe doing like a trans enduro, like trans BC or something.
Like yeah.
Blind racing's pretty cool.
I feel like those types of races are less, I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't know. It's just, it feels like they're more adventurous and less competitive.
Well, you don't pre-ride anything. It's all blind. Yeah. So it's just like, okay, just ride your bike down the hill and see how it goes. And it's like, you can't have too much pressure if that's how it is. And sometimes you're like riding through a mud pit and like doing like a gnarly sprint up a hill and you're just laughing like it's ridiculous. Uh-huh. But so it's, it doesn't feel serious.
It's you know, Miles is so good at those events.
He is.
And in watching him ride, if you ever get a like the opportunity to see Miles ride in person, it's just like he just on-sites everything.
He sees trails differently. Yeah. Like he just has like such a like different vision for riding than most people. Like it's so fun to watch and like try and keep up with. Mm-hmm. But he's just like so having so much fun while also doing really impressive things. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you ride with him a lot. Mm-hmm. You ride with Sky a lot. Is there anybody else? Like who's your big like crew that you're
it kind of changes a lot. Like definitely Sky and Miles a lot since we all work together and Oliver at Transition. But kind of just like a whole variety of folks that live here in town, like Keeland and Dern, they also work at Transition, so that helps a little bit. Like the whole Transition crew is pretty awesome.
I love the I don't know how the proper way to say it, what the proper word, and I don't want to say the wrong word, but the like camaraderie. That's it. That's the word I'm trying to say. The camaraderie between the employees there, and also it just seems like the company as a whole, like, is just all about supporting. Like, if you are down to like go dig trail and ride your bike and be a positive influence in the community in some aspect, Transition's like, oh yeah, go do that.
Yeah.
You know, like take a long lunch
for
you know?
Sure. Yeah.
But that's it's really cool to see sort of like that kind of, I don't have any employees as of yet. I hope to pretty soon because it'd be nice to not be working as much. You know, I hope to sort of bring some of that mentality into the company myself, but we should talk about Transition and your like role there, because I think also a lot of people might not realize that you work in the marketing department.
Yeah. Yeah, I technically have a full-time job in addition to being an athlete, which is cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting relationship that you have, you know. Obviously, you are like one of the most well-known free riders in the women mountain bike scene. You're sponsored by Red Bull. You know, you probably could just be a pro bike rider, but what is it about the idea of working in the marketing department for Transition? Like, what motivates you to take on a role like that and be a professional athlete at the same time?
Yeah, I think the relationship works really well because of who Transition is too. Like the whole, that position was their idea, like for me to be like a marketing team member as well as an athlete. And it works really well for me, like, because, I love riding with the folks there. So like, and everyone there is like very much like passionate about riding and bikes, and so there's never a shortage of people to ride with, people to learn from, people to get inspiration from. So like you kind of just have constant access to that, which is really important when I'm trying to like progress as an athlete. And I also like have another, it gives me like another outlet to be creative that's not just riding. So I'm doing video stuff, like helping Sky with like doing videos. I helped run a camera filming Nico multiple times, or like whenever we do product videos, like I'm sometimes the rider or sometimes behind the camera, a little bit of editing. It helps me be a more well-rounded athlete as well, because both things like complement each other really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, the team specifically, like Sky and Oliver, Miles, the whole like Transition crew, they're all like insanely talented. So I feel like being around them just helps me be a better athlete, a more creative person, and like I can just learn so much from them.
Yeah. So from like, and one thing that you've been getting into photography, and you have been shooting film and sort of just dabbling in sort of different creative outlets. Is that something that you had an interest in before you worked at Transition?
For sure. I just never really like knew how to get into it, or like didn't have like that didn't get feedback from anyone to like help me progress.
And sure. So, like, and Oliver and Sky are incredible mentors.
Yes, 100%.
They're both very, very talented.
Yeah.
Like photographers, videographers, you know, Oliver, it's so funny because he's like the oldest young guy I've ever met. he's like a grumpy old man, but he's like, what, 23 or something like that. He's so young, but he shoots incredible photos and his like, you know, it almost looks easy for him. Like he's bored. He's just like, he shoots an incredible photo and just is just like, it's cool. You know, like,
I think he internally gets excited about it. Like he gets stoked when he likes something he's working on.
For sure. But no, that's actually, it's really interesting, you know, that sort of relationship that you, or that position that you have and that relationship you have with the company. It's, I think it's really unique. I don't think a lot of, I don't know of any other riders who are both like a high level athlete and also working in the like day-to-day like marketing job of a company. You know,
it's hard to, because like they, because it's a bike company, they all, and like they also see me as an athlete, like they let me prioritize being an athlete first. So they, like, if I feel like I need to do something that will help me progress as a rider, they let me focus on that. So like I can take long rides or take days off that I need to like,
was that something that you sort of like, was that something that they brought to you saying like, hey, just so you know, you have this freedom?
Totally. Multiple times they've been like, if you need to go do your thing, like whatever you need to do to like be an athlete, like that is also part of your job. So like you can do that.
And I mean, it's a win-win for Transition, right?
For sure. Like, and me too. Yeah.
Yeah. You like, you're both, you and Transition are both, you know, they get to work directly with you. You're representing the brand and also helping the brand with their image, and you're contributing and multi facets, you know. The other, kind of going back to that subject that we were talking about with, you know, athletes who maybe become a professional athlete and then they don't really, they sort of pause their career to focus on being a professional athlete. I feel like that, like your relationship is sort of like a really good template for maybe future athletes and future relationships with athletes, because, you know, I think it promotes additional skills outside of just riding bikes, you know, because you can only ride at a professional level for so long. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when that kind of comes, you know, I remember, you know, when I worked at Diamondback, we sponsored Kelly McGarry. Mm-hmm. And I remember he had this internal dilemma of like, I'm kind of like washed up a little bit, you know, at one point in time, you know, before he passed away, he was like, yeah, I think I'm going to like retire after this year, after this rampage, I'm not going to ride anymore, or, you know, professionally anymore. Yeah. And he was like, what am I going to do? And John Kennedy at the time, who was the director of marketing at Diamondback, you know, was incredibly supportive of him and just sort of like trying to help him find like, hey, what are you good at? Mm-hmm. And he was good at carpentry. You know, he's like, cool. You know, like, I think I might just go back to building, you know, construction. And John's like, well, you build really good ramps. Like you've helped build courses. And so he founded that, I forget the name of the company with Todd. I forget the guy's name down in New Zealand, but they built the course, the, slope style course for Queenstown, or not Queenstown, the Rotorua, the first Rotorua stop at a Crankworks. And they built that course. And then it was in remembrance of Kelly, 'cause he had passed away, before I think that course, you know, but he helped design it and construct it. Mm-hmm. And that was just kind of one of those things where it's like, if you have a skill set or an interest that's outside of biking, it can still be involved with biking. You just need the right people in your corner to sort of like, you know, give you the tools to like flourish and grow and whatnot.
And so, sometimes the other things can help complement your riding. Like, like the photography and videography stuff helps me be a more well-rounded athlete, and just like have a better eye for artistic media and stuff.
For sure.
When I was coming up also, I had that same thing. Like I was passionate about video and photography, mm-hmm. and also a writer. And yeah. so like, it was really fun working with a creative person, collaborating with a creative person on shot angles and like, you know, you do a table or something and you'd be like, actually, yeah. I think, what if we shoot it from this side, you know, from like the backside or whatever, I feel like that might make it look a little better. You know, when you start to like be able to combine the creative aspect of content creation mm-hmm. and be able to visualize, you know, what you're going after as a writer, you can better work with those
yeah,
people.
100%. Yeah.
You know, and some of the people I remember, you know, they would, you know, if they weren't a creative person, they would be annoyed by like the photographer being like, actually, can we do another one? Yeah. Can we do another one? They're like, well, I already did it like three times. I don't want to do it anymore. You know, like, but if you come at it from like a perspective of like, oh, you know what? I see your vision and I want to work with you to, mm-hmm. to get that shot. You know, I think that, yeah, for sure. Like that's a really good, unique position to be in for sure.
Yeah. But it's fun.
Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit, mm-hmm. let's talk about trail building.
Okay.
You've contributed to building a lot of trails in this community. Mm-hmm. What was it about trail building that got you, that you felt like, you know what, I want to be a part of this? Was it that there wasn't the right types of trails or the right features that you were looking for and you felt like, you know what, I'm just going to go do that or like build those things? Or was it more so like the trail building community? Like what drove you to be actively building trails? Cause I think yeah. that's also unique. You know, there's a lot of obviously professional athletes that do that, but I feel like you spend a lot, probably more time than the average, person digging. So,
yeah, I think it's a little bit of all of those things you mentioned. Like the community in Bellingham is really cool, and around surrounding trail building, there's like a strong community of builders that are really passionate about it. So it was pretty easy for me to get connected with them and start helping some people out with their projects and just learn from them. And I felt like it was another opportunity to be creative with riding, because there's like endless potential with digging to like build whatever you want and whatever you can imagine. So it was just like another creative outlet, and that complemented my riding. So I like started off with just like helping fix up old trails and like help some friends with their projects, and then eventually changed into me like building my own trails and projects.
Yeah. And is that something like you want to do more of? If it's mm-hmm. like, you know what, like, all right, I'm working on this video, I want to build these specific features. And it kind of goes back to that creativity, like, portion of it. Like, it's like, no, I really want this. I want to ride this type of feature for this shot for my video. Is that kind of more where
totally.
You're headed?
And, like, I just get really picky about, like, the certain types of features I like. And also, with like, spending time with Sky and Oliver, because that's how they are, too. Like, they are very particular about which kind of trails they like and mm-hmm. what style of trail and, like, how things are built. So, like, spending time with them has definitely influenced the way I build trail and look at trails and things I want to ride. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that building trails has added to the progression of your riding, mm-hmm. being able to like, you know, I remember from my time, just a little, you know, like from my perspective, you know, it's like when you spend time in the woods building one feature, you get a lot of time to visualize yourself hitting that feature and you kind of have an idea of how much speed you need and whatnot. Do you feel like that helps you when you show up to Rampage, old Rampage site to ride? You're like, oh, I see the angle of this lip and the gap and the, like the drop is, it's kind of like this feature that I've ridden, and being able to visualize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like, I think one of the hardest things about free riding is, like, turning a vision into reality, like, something that hasn't been hit before, like, guinea pigging something and, like, riding it for the first time. Like, it's so scary, and, like, it's a whole skill set in itself to be able to, like, see something, see a vision, build it, and then ride it. Like, that
Yeah.
That's like the essence of free riding.
Yeah. So. And I think like you know, when you spend a lot of time building that feature, you mm-hmm. know, it makes it a little bit easier, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's still hard and scary, mm-hmm. obviously. Guinea pigging anything is really scary.
Yeah.
What's the scariest thing you've ever guinea pigged?
Ooh. Some stuff in Utah for sure, like stuff at Formation. I've guinea pigged a few like drops and features out there that were pretty scary.
Were they features that existed previously or brand new features?
Some of
that
both.
You guys,
yeah. Yeah. Some that we like rebuilt and then some that were kind of, like new, but still had never like seen anyone hit or like hadn't been hit in 5 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I had some stuff here. Like, I guess like the ravine gap is an example.
Oh, yeah.
From that patrol video. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't the first person to hit it because it was built by Keeland and Brad, I think, like years ago, and then hadn't been touched for a long time. I rebuilt it and mm-hmm. then guinea pigged it after the rebuild
mm-hmm.
For that video.
Yeah. Yeah. You're actually a really good person to be towed in by.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Because you're a very consistent bike rider. Like, you. I think you're a very calculated rider. You know, like, oh yeah, I know the right speed and whatnot. So if you just get it right on your rear wheel, there are some people that are not good at that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually because of my background, I tend to pull back. I go fast and pull back really hard because like that's how you would hit mm-hmm. jumps on a BMX bike.
Right.
Sky also does a lot of that. Billy Lewis also a lot of that. And I remember, you know, riding A-line with people who are racers and just being like, what the fuck? Like, you're good. Like, stop pulling back. I'm going to crash into you in the air, you know, because they're scrubbing. You know? They're scrubbing and I'm yanking.
Yeah, like the time you hit the last jump on Blue Steel.
Oh, God. Which time?
Yeah.
I've cased that jump.
The time your tire mark was on the backside
of
the
I've done that three times.
No way, really?
Yes. I'm not going to, I don't want to dog on that, but I think that jump is a little
too
long.
No, I think you're right. Yeah. We need to make it so you can get more speed. That's one of the changes I want to make to that line for next year. It's like mm-hmm. a lot of the girls at Hank Time also struggle with it. It's not, I think it's a jump problem, not a rider problem.
Yeah,
it's just a little slow.
I consistently need to like throw pedals in.
Yeah, me too.
Which is terrifying when you're going that fast and then throwing a crank in, like, if my chain breaks or if I slip a pedal or something, I'm literally going to face plant the lip. And it's like, it's really scary to like, you know, I actually have started to just stop at that jump.
Yeah. Like
because I get a little, I'm just like, you're like, you know, the risk isn't worth the reward isn't worth the risk. You know, for me personally, I'm also getting older, you know, I'll be 36 this year, but I, you know, it's no excuse. I see a lot of people that are in their 40s. They're killing it.
Yeah.
Way harder than I could even imagine. But, Doug, how much time? Where are we at here?
We're at 122.35.
122. Okay. We got a little bit of time left. So I got some text messages from Blake Hansen and Amanda Bryan. They had some questions for you.
Are you going to have Amanda on the podcast?
I would love to have Amanda on the podcast.
Nice. Amanda's my BFF for everyone out there. She was the very first person I met in Bellingham ever. Like, day one in Bellingham, I met Amanda on the boardwalk in Fairhaven.
That's she's like one of those infectious people that just instantly you're best friends.
Yeah.
You know,
literally instantly like best friends. Like, we literally, day one in Bellingham, I met her, best friends. Yeah.
Wait, did you guys met on the boardwalk, not like being like, oh, we're bike riders or whatever?
Well, I was walking on the boardwalk with my dad and my mom because they were dropping me off at college, and she was riding her bike on the boardwalk. And coincidentally, she was riding with someone that my dad had met like 2 weeks prior at like this other ride that they did on Mount Hood. And they like pulled over and we chatted, and she was like, oh, Amanda, I work at Kona at the bike shop. Like, here's my business card. She gave me her business card, and I went and visited her the next day. And then we just started riding together.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. She is incredible. She is the type of person that will just like bring the party, you know, and bring the ruckus.
Yep. 100%.
Yep. You should have seen her. You didn't make it to our, Christmas party that we had at our house. But her and Carly Bach were on another level that night. It was like
I saw the videos, but I was told not to talk about them.
Yeah, they kind of destroyed the house in a good way. Nothing broke, but you know, it was like full carnage. It was great. Okay, Blake says, here we go. There's three questions here. First one, what do you think it is about you that makes you want to send it so hard? It seems like you just jumped right into MTB a handful of years ago and never paused the progression button. Why?
I think the like short answer to that is just like a pure passion and enjoyment of that aspect of riding, and like of most things that I do, I like progressing at them. Like that's what gets me stoked. And so for mountain biking, it was a very rapid progression because for a lot of reasons, but like Bellingham is such an amazing place to progress as a mountain biker. I just wanted to do it as much as I possibly could. So yeah. I think that's the short answer.
Yeah.
That's just what me as a person, that's what I love about riding is like progressing. Yeah.
That's a great, great response to that. Okay. Next one. Here we go. Okay. What has been the most difficult or challenging part of being a professional bike rider for you?
That's
a good question.
That's a tough one. I think for me, my trajectory has been very rapid and a bit like abrupt almost. Like I was an unknown, completely unknown rider, and then a couple months later I was like sponsored by Red Bull and like had a bunch of big sponsors, and like so my trajectory has been exponential, you could say, and I think that has been challenging to adapt to that and like try and just like make sure my goals and focus didn't change too much. Like I want to make sure that I'm riding because I love it and that the external changes don't affect that too much, then also adapting to them, so like but keeping my
like, well, you do a really good job about being humble. Like, it's really funny. Like, I try to, I imagine, I don't know, and maybe you can speak to this. It might be a little interesting to talk about a little bit, but I imagine having a Red Bull hat on because, you know, it's part of your, like, existence as a professional athlete. You have to, like, you know, promote them and whatnot. And so I imagine that, like, the looks you might get from people just walking through the airport or going to the grocery store or whatever, you know, do you get stopped by people that know who you are?
So like, or sometimes they don't know, but they just are curious because Red Bull is like synonymous with like a high level of something. So people are just curious. But
what's really interesting is some people don't know, like, you know, I actually talked about this with Lou before, like being like, oh yeah, well, you know, like if you have a Red Bull hat, you probably like people probably stop and like, oh my gosh, like, oh, and she's like, well, I don't think the average person, unless you are into like action sports or adrenaline sort of focused sports. And that's a big spectrum with Red Bull. Most people, like maybe a old lady at the market or something, isn't really going to know like, oh, that they might just think like, oh that like person, that person really likes energy drinks, you know,
totally.
Like,
I think that's more, common.
Like I'm just curious, you know, like what it is, what it's like sort of, you know, like wearing a hat like that or walking around with a helmet like that. Like when you're riding on Galbi, you know, do you feel like you have to like be like, I mean, you are a very genuinely humble and open and fun and kind and caring person. And you'll be like, hey, I'll tow you into this, like to a random stranger. But like, does it wear on you? You know, like being a professional athlete, does it sort of like, you know, is it something that you're sort of like, oh man, I just kind of want to like ride without the stresses of like anyone.
Yeah. I think at first maybe I dealt with that a bit more, but like, it's not like every time I ride, people are like commenting on it or anything.
Sure.
Like I'm sure it's obviously very noticeable, like a shiny helmet that you're riding with, but like, I think as long as it doesn't bother me or I don't think about it, as long as I'm just like riding for myself and having fun, which I try and do like as much as I possibly can. Just like every time I'm riding, it's just cause I genuinely want to and I like it. So like that sort of makes it easy to not think about the other pressure.
I mean, the other thing too, from what you've told me and Jill and some of the other Red Bull athletes that I've communicated with in the past, you know, they've talked about the insane support network
100%.
That Red Bull provides to their athletes. Like, Bryn broke his pinky and he got it fixed here. Bryn Atkinson broke his pinky and got it fixed here, and they botched it. And so he had to, like, Red Bull was like, oh, well, you should just come to our doctor because, you know, he's married to Jill. And they're like, he went and got fixed by the Red Bull staff.
Whatever, I don't think they have, like, a staff doctor, but they have connections.
Specific, you know, these really specific, really good doctors that they work with. And Bryn got his finger. They had to, like, re-break it or something in certain, but which sounds really brutal.
It's a bummer.
But they got it, but he got it fixed again. And it's like, you know, those... that sort of like extending that sort of like, you know, like support network to their athletes and athletes, family members and things like that, I think is really quite a special thing. You know, I think, you know, the other thing too, is they really prioritize, like, you've been to the mental health camps that they do.
Totally.
And, you know, it's all about like, hey, how can we support you and make you feel not psychologically worn down, you know?
Yeah, they want to support you as a human versus, like, what you're doing as an athlete. It's like they usually, the people they want to work with are people they work with for reasons other than just what they do in their sport. So I think this is a lot about the brand. And, yeah, they, I feel very supported by them, and it's been pretty amazing getting to work with them and have those opportunities.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Blake, hopefully that helped answer some of those questions.
Yeah, I don't remember what the original question was.
It was the hardest part about being the most challenging part about being a pro, and your trajectory was
coming into it
really quick.
Managing that has been,
okay, and then this one's a fun one. She says, what's your most embarrassing moment outside of bikes? Ooh. It's probably a really hard question to answer. I don't know if I can answer that.
I'm having a hard time thinking of that, of an embarrassing moment.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I probably couldn't come up with that answer personally.
I think if, like, I was talking, some, like, a story would come up, but I can't, like, think of something off the top of my head.
Well, we'll have to save that one for a personal answer.
Yeah, if I think about it, I'll tell the story. Because if I think of something, I would be happy to share it. I just, like, genuinely can't think of...
It's a hard one. Just put it on your spot. Okay. And then the only thing that Amanda said was, I heard your cat is a murderer.
Yeah, she's pretty evil, but also very sweet.
What's your cat's name again?
Garbanzo.
Garbanzo.
She's named after chairlift at Whistler, Garbo.
Yeah. Where, you've had Garbo for a long time, right?
Since 2019.
Mm-hmm.
However many,
four
years.
What makes her a murderer?
She just kills stuff, like a lot of stuff. Like
indoor, outdoor cats?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like birds and...
Yeah. Birds, squirrels, mice, bats.
Bats?
How bunnies.
Do you catch a bat?
I don't know. She's done it multiple times.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane. We used to have this cat when I was growing up. Her name was Claire. All of our pets growing up had human names, which is really funny. But she was the craziest hunter. She was also indoor, outdoor. She was like a barn cat. You know, I grew up in the country, and so, like, we had this barn cat. My dad really liked having a cat, outdoor cat, mostly. He didn't really like the cat coming inside, but, you know, us kids were like, come inside, kitty, you know? but she had all of her claws, and she would just catch... Cats are really fascinating because they'll catch an animal, but then they torture it. Like,
yeah, she does that.
Yeah.
It's, like, pretty terrible.
But she would, like, catch, like, full-grown rabbits and birds and stuff. And then our house had a basement that had, like, one of those metal half-circle silo things so that you could have a full-size window in the basement.
Yeah.
And you can get some natural light in. And she would just drop these animals into this thing so they couldn't get back out.
Oh,
and then
God.
She would just, like, sit there and watch them as they just, like...
They're scrambling.
Yeah.
Oh.
And my dad would have to come out and try to scoop them out and let them go. Most of the time, they were borderline alive, you know. But yeah, cats are vicious, vicious
They're
animals.
They're vicious. I'm definitely a cat person. I love my cat. She's vicious. She's evil.
Nice. Okay. I guess lastly, what's on the docket moving forward?
I am going to Mexico with you next month. Very much looking forward to that. It's gonna be awesome.
So fun. I'm really excited.
We're gonna go free ride fiesta and have a fiesta and hit some big jumps and get some sunshine in Guadalajara. That's gonna be amazing.
Yep.
And then right after that, I'm gonna go to the Red Bull HQ in LA for a day. They're gonna let me do some like stuff at the APC, which is the Athlete Performance Center.
Is that like physio kind of stuff?
They do physio. I meant to go there in the summer when I hurt my ankle, but I couldn't make it work, so that I'm doing it now, and I'm just going to get to go see the HQ and stuff. And then the next day I'm going to New Zealand for a little over 3 weeks with some friends just to like ride and check it out there because I haven't been yet and I really want to go. And
we're going to go to Queenstown, right?
Yeah. Going to just like try and be on my bike as much as possible going into the season, because I think that's one thing I kind of was missing the last couple of years, was like coming into the season feeling slightly underprepared, just because sometimes the winter in Bellingham isn't the best to be on the bike all the time. So I'm gonna try and like cut my winter a little short and go spend some time over there and see what that does. And then right after I get back from that, I'm gonna go to Bolivia for a week with Miles and Leaf and a few other friends.
What is that? What does that trip entail?
We're just gonna go ride some scree stuff there. It's like super high elevation mountain scree riding. They have some really amazing riding there, and Leaf has a friend / guide who lives there, and they've been trying to plan a trip for years now, and finally Leaf was like, here's the dates, you want to come? And I was like, sure. So
that's Bolivia's in South America, right?
Yeah, it's north of Chile, I think.
Oh, cool. Nice. That's also, you were just in Chile.
I was just in Chile,
I want to go there so bad.
It was awesome. It was amazing. Love it down there.
Yeah. Did you ride that stuff that's like right kind of outside Santiago?
Yeah.
That's like looking out at the ocean, like ridgeline stuff?
We rode La Parva, which is a bike park there. And it's like, it's a little ways outside of Santiago, like 40 minutes. And it's like really cool, like big volcano rides, like really high speed, long descending trails. Like you can drop so much elevation there, and it's pretty awesome.
You also rode some like free ride stuff there.
Yeah, when we were there, we also went to the north of Chile in Antofagasta, which is a small town. It's not that small, it's kind of medium size, but anyway, we flew up there into the desert, which is the north, and went to this bike park called Roca Park. Check it out, they're awesome. It's just this crew of guys. Bastian is one of them, and he sort of has been developing the riding scene there and made this bike park, which is a little zone in their desert that he built some jumps and some big drops, and they have like awesome scree lines. So they're doing really cool stuff there. And that place is incredible because it is on the ocean, so you're like at sea level, but it's the most like arid desert in the world, like legitimately, other than like the North and South Pole.
Wow.
And so they don't get any rain. Like it rains, he told me it rains there once every like 10 years. And
wow.
So legitimately there's no plants other than like landscaping. Like some of the houses have like cactuses and stuff, but like the land there is like so amazing for scree and free riding because it's so dry and just like is soft and deep and really good.
Wow, that's insane. Chile is the second largest.
Yeah, they have a really
distributor, like, or market. We have a pretty great distributor down there.
They have a really cool bike scene and community down there, like really strong and really passionate. So it was pretty amazing to get to spend time there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. You're going to be the first episode for the new year.
Okay.
It'll drop on the 4th, I think. So
I just need to tell one embarrassing story because it's not my most embarrassing story because I can't really think of anything. Mm-hmm. But the other day at the gym, I was bench pressing and I got stuck. And I got stuck there for a while because no one was paying attention. And I was like, help. But no one saw me. And so I was just like stuck under the bench for a while. I was pretty embarrassed about that. So there's one story for you, Blake, so that I don't leave you hanging.
All right. And then we'll have to think of another one to tell, maybe a super embarrassing one that we can tell in private.
Yeah, okay. I'll think about it.
I'm really excited that you came on, and yeah, this is awesome. This is going to be a great way to kick off 2023.
Heck yeah.
And then this will come out. And then I think the next episode, I'm going to try to record in Mexico while we're down there. So I think it's going to be kind of fun to like switch up the scenery. And I won't give away any of the guests, but I would also like to, I have an idea of maybe trying to do another episode while we're down there with our housemates, because we have like a pretty eclectic, large mm-hmm. group of people that are going to be staying there. A lot of different stories, a lot of different whatever. And we're going to have, I was thinking I'll probably bring 3 mics and we can just do like an episode where we're just all shooting the shit by the pool or something, you know, I don't know.
Also, my dad told me the other day that he really wants to come to Mexico for Fred Fiesta. So I told him if he wanted to come, he could probably stay at our house.
I think there's room.
So he might come.
Yeah, that would be great. I love Tim. Tim's the best. Awesome. Yeah.
Shout out to Timmy. He's great.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the best. Okay, cool. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on. Since this is coming out after the new year, happy New Year's, everyone. And we'll catch you guys next time, hopefully in Mexico.
Yeah. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me. That was great.
All right. Bye.